This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Rita Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. We're doing things a little differently here today. And to explain how we're doing things differently, you know, explain yourself, Audrey Raj, who's laughing in the background.
Good morning, Frida. So what we're going to do today is we're going to break from our regular programming and continue to bring you news and analysis following the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as the country's prime minister. So just a recap of what we know or we have known for about half a day now. Yeah. Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin resigned as the Prime Minister yesterday after conceding that he no longer possessed the majority needed to remain in the position. Istana Negara, however, confirmed that he will serve as the caretaker Prime Minister until a successor is appointed.
Right. The Yang Di-Pertuan Agong also expressed that he was not in favour of conducting fresh elections now due to the pandemic. Yeah. And the leaders of Malaysia's main political leaders have been summoned for an audience with the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong today, believed to be for discussions on the next prime minister. And after the PH administration collapsed last year, the Agong has also met with the party leaders before appointing Muhyiddin as the prime minister.
So the same thing that happened, you know, in February or early March
last year. It's deja vu.
Yes, it is. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring some guests on to kind of talk us through what the process is going to be like over the next few days and how this will impact the country, our economy. But right after a quick break, we'll have Professor Rozan Othman, senior partner at Human Capital Development, on the line with us. And we're going to talk to him about how announcements like these impact the civil service, you know, what it's like there for them in government departments today and, you know, over the next few days. During all this uncertainty, we'll also ask him, you know, until we install a new cabinet, what's the game plan? And we will put to him the question that we are asking you on the show today.
Yes, which is, what kind of leader does Malaysia need right now? And let us know your thoughts via Twitter, Instagram, WhatsApp. Of course, on Twitter and Instagram, it's at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So,
yeah, but for now, we have the Smiths with Ask. When we come back,
Ask.
And when we come back, we'll have Professor Rozan on the line. You're listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Building First World Malaysians. BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Enterprise. Good morning. Frida Liu here together with Audrey Raj. We're doing things a little differently. We're not open for business. We're open for other things.
Yes, we are. We're continuing to bring you news and analysis following the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as the country's prime minister. What we understand is the leaders of Malaysia's main political parties have been summoned for an audience with the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong today, believed to be for discussions on the next prime minister. We'll be bringing you updates on that as and when they come in. But for now, we have on the line with us Professor Rozan Othman, senior partner at Human Capital Development. We thought we'd talk to him about, you know, what's the game plan until we install a new cabinet? You know, how will the civil service try to, well, we'll work with what they have right now, you know, when we don't have a head of state. Professor, thank you for staying on the line with us. Now, right off the bat, you know, what are your initial thoughts on the Prime Minister's resignation?
Last year, BFN had interviewed me on the issue of the change of the government that happened in March last year. And my comment then was that what the event created is it created a precedence on how the change in the federal government can happen. Right. In the past, we've never had a situation where the federal government fall because members of political parties switch camps, decided to basically go to another camp, and as a result led to the change in the federal government. I pointed out that while technically it is legal and it is allowed within our system, but it is something that has never been a part of how we practice democracy in our country. And by doing that, what the Pakatan Nasional or the Perikatan Nasional has done is that it now made it possible for other parties to basically resort to the same strategy. So what you see happening this year or within the last few weeks is basically the same cycle happening again, which finally led to the resignation of the Prime Minister today. So in a way, the Perikatan National Government cannot blame others. They cannot ask for sympathy or understanding, largely because they basically reap what they sow, and that's what they sow last year.
So what goes around comes around, yeah, Prof. Now, what usually happens, though, when there's this sudden vacancy or transition in ministers? We know, we've heard news over the weekend of aides packing up. So do things happen that quickly?
Now, yes, there has been reports and even videos of various ministers and their officers vacating the office over the weekend in anticipation of the resignation. I think what basically happened was the reaction from UMNO and PH parties to the PM's speech on Friday evening pretty much sealed the deal. There was no room for reconciliation. It was a case of perhaps trying to do too little too late. And therefore, everybody understood that there was no future for this government, for this cabinet. Actually, it gave me a sense of deja vu because I knew that that was what happened in 2020. When the various special officers and even the ministers started vacating their office on the Sunday when it was announced that the Yang di-Pertuan Agong will be calling upon Tan Sri Mahyidin Yassin to be sworn in as the Prime Minister. So pretty much what you see happening is quite typical and people knew that it was going to happen. I think the writing on the wall was there. I think instead of being asked to leave, it's more honourable to leave on your own accord. And I think that's how many of the special officers and ministers probably thought about the situation.
Now, Professor, how do announcements like these impact the civil service? You know, how disruptive is this to the way government departments work, or is it pretty much BAU, business as usual?
As far as the civil service is concerned, during an interim period like this, the civil service will continue to be led by the chief secretary or the KSU for the respective kementerian. Now, even under normal circumstances, when it comes to operational matters, for the most part, it is the KSU and his senior management team as well as the rest of the divisional directors are the one who pretty much run the show. So as far as the rakyat is concerned, all the services that are provided by the various ministries should be able to continue. Everything is already provided for within the various policies, within the various procedures and circulars that is usually used to guide implementation of decisions and policies of the government. And likewise, the budget has been allocated for during the budget debate last year. So you can expect at the operational level, dealing with, for instance, services like renewing your passport and all that for members of the public, things will continue as usual. Some ministries may decide, for instance, to defer certain major contracts, for instance, but I would say that those will be the exceptions.
Right. Prof, is there a handover right now because Tan Sri Mahyidin is still the caretaker PM?
Actually, the current designation of Tan Sri Mohiuddin Yassin is as the caretaker Prime Minister. So basically, it's a temporary position while waiting for the appointment of the Yang di-Pertuan Agong to basically decide on who is the candidate that is most suitable to be asked to form the next government. So for as long as he is the caretaker Prime Minister, there will not be a handover of power. That will basically happen much later on. The challenge now is how to basically make sure that this does not last too long. Our situation now will have to depend on which of the many political parties who are hoping to come to power can prove that they have the majority, or at least they have a sizable minority that gives them the credibility and gives the Yang di-Pertuan Agong the reason to believe that if given the opportunity, they have a fair chance of forming a majority government. So this will be the situation. How long a caretaker prime minister will be in office will not depend so much on him, largely because he serves at the pleasure of the Yang di-Pertuan Agong. The sooner the decision on who will be asked to form the next government is made, then the sooner the caretaker prime minister will have to vacate his position and make way for the next prime minister.
Right. And Professor, based on your experience, what would the handover look like? You know, how would it impact government departments?
Actually, there is no clear formal process of handover or transition in the government. When I was part of the transition team that moved into the office of the Deputy Prime Minister under Datuk Sri Wan Azizah in 2018, nobody was sure in terms of what was supposed to happen. I was there one day before Datuk Sri Wan Azizah took her oath and basically reported to work at the office. So a lot of what we needed to do, we basically had to ask around. A few of the civil servants who were there helped us, assisted us in terms of what are the things that need to be done. A few documents were handed over to us, but it took time for us to even digest and read everything because people were still trying to make sense of what is happening. I suspect the same thing basically also happened during the change of government last March. There was no proper handover. In fact, even during the case of the 2018 change of government, there was no handover from the outgoing prime minister to the incoming prime minister, though there were a few former cabinet ministers who took the trouble to meet with their successor and to have a small sort of a handover ceremony. But as far as a formal ceremony, there never was such a process. I think if there is a new government coming in this time, it's going to be consisting mostly of people who have been in government. So the transition will probably be less problematic and probably much smoother because there are already people who are already familiar with the rules of the game and probably even familiar with the many civil servants who will be assisting them.
Right. And Prof, you know, until we install a new cabinet, what's the game plan? Do they continue to execute the dasa-dasa from PN as, you know, in Tan Sri Mahyadin's own words, or are they in limbo?
I believe there has to be a number of pivot that happens in order to turn around the situation in this country. When Tan Sri Mahyudin became the Prime Minister last year, he had talked about taking over power in order to save the country. We are in a worse situation today and we really need a leader who can basically save the country and turn around the situation that we are facing. I think there are obviously two very pressing issues that the new government has to be able to do. One is to pivot in the way they are dealing with the COVID pandemic. Doing more of the same is not going to be effective. They also need to think in terms of pivot in terms of our economic strategy and economic policy. In terms of fighting the COVID pandemic, I think a very important starting point is improving on the crisis management approach of the new government. We all know that there's been a lot of complaints about ministers speaking with expressing different opinions and different positions on a number of issues. There was a lot of confusion in terms of what many of the rules that were set entail. And I think this cannot continue. People are tired and there is no reason to allow it to happen. So there has to be better crisis management, and one of the things is to start speaking with one voice, coming up with well-developed policies and not just recycling old ideas and then calling them new policies. Another thing that I think is going to be very important in managing the pandemic is going to be a disciplinary approach. Fighting this pandemic is not just a medical issue. It is also about changing people's behavior. It is about understanding how people behave. It's also about understanding their needs, their fear. So all of this other knowledge about consumer behavior, about collective sociology, mental health, need to be brought into the discussion so that we can then figure out what would be the best strategy to get people to change, to get people on board the process of fighting the pandemic. We also need to look at better use of data that has been collected, especially by MySejahtera. The DG had for a very long time stubbornly refused to share the data, insisting that it is against the law, even though the Personal Data Protection Act does not prohibit the use of data for research for as long as we do not reveal the identity of the participants or respondents of the research. And this data can help us understand better, for instance, how what categories or what types of people are more vulnerable, less vulnerable, how do they get infected, which are the infection points. And having all of this information will enable us to make more precise targeting of our intervention steps. Instead of always relying on people coming to the vaccination center, there has to be more emphasis on in situ intervention that involves vaccinating people in their vulnerable points. Now, there is already a shift towards this, but I think it is a case of too little too late, and we need to be more aggressive in terms of going out. It's a bit like when we were fighting the communist terrorists. We don't just defend our villages and towns. We went into the jungle to look for them. That would be the analogy that I would expect to see, of what I expect to see in the new approach. The other thing that I think is also very important, especially in dealing with the workplace cluster, is actually the involvement of the employers. I think one of the things that has been a complaint in the past of from various parties has been decisions that were related to them that were made but without consultation with them. For instance, decisions relating to the role of the GPs and the private hospitals in the pandemic fight were made without even the discussion with the MMA. Same thing, decisions on the rating system for the malls and all that were simply imposed without even any discussion with the retailers. I think this cannot be the way we try to get people on board, to get people to help us. The way to do it is to get more people involved through consultation,
right,
and developing a fast-acting action plan from the input from the rakyat.
Right. All right, Prof, we're going to take a quick break for some messages. So when we come back, we will ask Professor Rosan Othman from Human Capital Development about what the economy needs, you know, what needs to be done to aid its recovery. Also, what we're asking everyone on the show today, what kind of leader does Malaysia need right now? You can get in touch with us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Also, get in touch with us on Twitter and on Instagram at BFM Radio is our handle. But for now, here's Franz Ferdinand with Do You Want to Be the Next Prime Minister? BFM 89.9.
Brave, free Malaysians. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Ria Leo. You're listening to Enterprise with a Difference. Audrey Raj here with me. Of course, we're halfway through a conversation.
Yes, we have Professor Rosan Othman on the line with us. He's a senior partner at Human Capital Development. And we were just discussing how announcements, like we heard yesterday on Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's resignation as Prime Minister, impacts the civil service, you know, and based on his experience, just what would a handover look like? Is there a real handover now, because Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin is our caretaker prime minister, right? And we were just discussing some of what will the game plan be until we install a new cabinet and what needs to be addressed. And he was, and we kind of caught him, we kind of interrupted him there in a bit. And I think he wanted to comment a bit about the economy. Professor, thank you for staying on the line with us. Now, let's come back to the economy, Professor. You know, what needs to what needs to be done to aid the country's economic recovery?
As for economic recovery, there has to be a clear understanding of the strategy in terms of what will be the new drivers that will help pull the economy out of its current slump. The fight or the attempt to improve the performance of the economy under the current pandemic has often been described by some researchers as being similar to trying to recover from a war. We know, for instance, after the Second World War, the Americans and the Europeans relied on what was then called the Marshall Plan to reconstruct Europe. So the focus was not only in terms of reconstructing the buildings and the infrastructure in the European countries that were devastated by the war, but was also to rebuild the economy. Many of the American management techniques were exported to the European countries. And what we now know today as the Japanese quality management system, for instance, the use of statistical quality control, migrated from the US through gurus like Demings after the Second World War. These were the various initiatives that were started as part of the Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe. And I think we need a similar line of thinking to ask ourselves what are the key recoveries that we need that can then pull the other sectors of the economy. The other thing that I think is also very important in economic recovery is rejuvenating the SMEs. Many SMEs have been badly affected by the business. Many have closed down. We need to provide them with the means to restart. And this can be in the form of various forms of assistance to help them with their working capital so that they can restart their operation. This has to be well thought out so that not only the these companies can start operating again, but the reopening of the SMEs also ensure the other players along their supply chain. For instance, we know many SMEs also supply to even the bigger companies, the multinational companies in the manufacturing sector. So if there is a slowdown or the inability of these SMEs to restart, what you will see happening, it will have ripple effect. Even the biggest company will be affected, and the MNCs may decide that they better move to other countries instead of remaining with Malaysia. So it's going to be about rejuvenating the SMEs to basically to rejuvenate the whole supply chain to ensure the competitiveness of our various sectors of the economy. And another important thing that we also need to focus on in terms of economic recovery is the strengthening of the middle class businesses or middle class entrepreneurs. We know these are businesses that tend to be more knowledge intensive compared to the small and micro businesses. We also know that they are also more likely to innovate. They have the knowledge intensity to innovate, and a lot more support need to be given to them so that their growth can then help pull the smaller companies and become the engine of employment and job opportunities in the country.
Right, Prof. So what kind of leader does Malaysia need right now? What kind of values or skills do they need?
Now, given the situation that we are in, there are a lot of unhappiness as well as despair amongst the people. And this is reflected in the higher incidences of mental health problems, suicide, people losing their job, and people needing to basically seek alternative sources of income and food for their families. These are real and pressing issues. Unfortunately, some of the responses from the politicians, especially those who are in power, have not been very pleasing to the ears of the rakyat. And I think whoever becomes the next leader will need to be able to establish that credibility and its sincerity in terms of the desire to help everyone quickly and effectively. Now, to do that, what we need is a leader who, in terms of competency and in terms of values, also have the ability to lead turnaround. And what I mean by leading a turnaround is that he has to think of how to get the whole team to be able to orchestrate the recovery from the pandemic as well as the recovery from the economy. Now, this is not going to happen if, for instance, our civil service continue to operate like a machine bureaucracy that will only work based on what it already knows on its own, its current set of rules and regulation. Mm-hmm. We're facing an unprecedented crisis. We are facing new challenges, and we need a lot of original thinking. We need creativity at the policy level, and this is what the new leader must be able to extract from the people around them. Another important thing that the leader must be able to do is to empower the government machineries to actually move faster. What we see nowadays is that when people are in trouble, they prefer to depend on NGOs. NGOs are just far more responsive, much quicker in looking, searching for problems that needs to be resolved, looking for people who need help. And I think some of the instances that I've come to know of how requests for aid from some of the agencies have turned out shows how slow the some of these government agencies operate. They need to prepare paper, they need to have a meeting which is going to happen in a few days' time, and then after everything has been agreed from the district level, it has to go back to the state level for approval. And within the whole process, you will see it can take a few days, and at the same, and during that period, there are hungry families who do not have enough to eat. And I think we need to revamp how things are run at the low level, and to decentralize, empower civil servants so that they can make the decision, they can buy the food, they can distribute the food without going through such an elaborate process. So this will require actually also revamping how the various agencies at the ground level are working together. Now, the previous, the pre-Qatar national government has put the police in charge. I think that is good, but we have to also remember that many decisions are not within the authority of the police, especially in terms when it comes to helping people needing food. The police do not have the budget to give food per se. They have to rely on other agencies. Given that the police are already tied up with manning roadblocks, making inspection, I think it's very important to figure out how to improve on the performance of the other agencies also. A very important thing to also achieve that this new leader has to be able to achieve is to build consensus, especially in winning over the confidence of the rakyat and winning over the confidence of the investors. And to do this, he must show that he can hold the new government together, that he can create a broad coalition that is stable enough to sustain it for the next 2 to 3 years so that investors' confidence can basically return. And another important thing that leaders must also understand, especially in this complex and dynamic environment, is to recognize that the old model of leadership, where the leader knows best, where the leader is the genius, you know, our great leader, our genius leader, the notion, such notions of leadership, has no place anymore in this complex environment. In fact, the current thinking in leadership theories today is to talk about what is called distributed leadership, the idea of actually leadership as being consisting, as dispersed across many individuals, And it is these individuals working together. Sometimes they may not even be a part of an organization, and yet they are able to work together through networks, through social relationships to actually affect change. And we see this happening already, largely through the NGOs. I think the government need to learn about the fluidity and the organicity of the NGOs in terms of how to become much, much more effective and shift their model away from the typical mechanistic bureaucracy to become far more responsive.
Right. It's like ride sharing, I guess.
Right. Professor, before we let you go, these distributed leaders, what do they need to do to help our civil service continue to perform at their best during this time?
I think the biggest challenge is for any leader is to look again at the civil service and to ask what changes must we do to make our civil service far more competitive. The current civil service, I would argue, is a legacy from the era of a strong leader where the leader knows best, where everybody else try to basically just not rock the boat when the leader says something. I think we need a far more dynamic civil service that is not just rule-bound, but we need a lot more senior civil servant who can think strategically, who can think outside the box and can actually develop policies, new policies initiative, and even create policy shifts in order to reallocate resources and to respond more effectively at the challenges that we are facing. This will have to be one of the agenda of whoever becomes the next Prime Minister, to rethink and to strategize how to reform the civil service so that it can become viable and effective in the future. Among other things, this will have to include relooking at how leaders are being trained, how leaders are being selected in the civil service, so that in the future we have leaders who can strengthen the institution in terms of its ability to respond to challenges. The future is not going to be less volatile than it already is today. We can expect that the future may even be worse. We also have to recognize that one of the things that we as a nation has to do, and this includes especially the civil service, is to not just how to overcome the pandemic, but to start thinking how to prevent the next pandemic from coming, or from COVID from recurring again. This may require a lot of rethinking about our relationship with the environment, our relationship with nature, and how we behave in terms of our public hygiene, in terms of our health policies, and how we are allocating resources. There are obviously pressing issues like the contract doctors that has to also be addressed as part of the complete solution that we need to put this country on a stronger footing.
Right.
Right. Thank you for that, Professor. That was Professor Rozhan Othman, Senior Partner at Human Capital Development. Now, we are continuing to bring you news and analysis following the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as the country's Prime Minister. We're going to take a quick break for some messages, but on the show today, and especially at noon on Enterprise BizBytes, we are asking you, what kind of leader does Malaysia need right now? 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, at BFM Radio on Twitter and on Instagram. We've got some interesting messages that have already come in. We'll try and read you a few.
As many as possible.
But for now, here's Rolling Stones with Jumpin' Jack Flash. You're listening to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.